From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Robbie Feinberg with the news on this day in Maine, Friday, May 3rd, 2024.
This Day in Maine is made possible by Now You're Cooking, celebrating 24 years of selling cookware, kitchen tools, gadgets, and fine wine on historic Front Street in downtown Bath, open 7 days a week.
A major milestone was reached today in Lewiston's ongoing recovery from the mass shootings that killed 18 and wounded more than 13 others at a bowling alley and bar last October. Unlike some businesses that are demolished or shutter after similar traumatic events, the bowling alley reopened.
Ready? One, two, three! Yay!
Hundreds of people turned out for an emotional ribbon-cutting ceremony to show their support for just-in-time recreation. And this morning, before the doors opened to the public for the first time in 6 months, a line of more than two dozen had already formed outside. Susan Sharon has more.
We did it.
There were hugs and tears and counselors on hand as owners Justin and Samantha Turay welcomed everyone to the newly refurbished bowling alley.
Thank you for having us.
Come on in.
Thank you for opening.
Memorials to those who were lost on October 25th are on the walls and tables.
It's a pretty good ball there, right? Let's throw that again. We'll try it with a couple different balls.
John Robinson and his 18-year-old son, Colin, wasted no time getting back into the swing of things with bowling practice. John is a volunteer bowling coach who says they wanted to be here to honor their friends who were killed.
We lost one of our youth coaches, tremendous man. Coach Bob was a tremendous guy and a very integral part of our youth bowling community. And there you go.
They also lost Bob Violette's wife, Lucy, and 14-year-old Aaron Young, a member of the Youth Bowling League. Colin and his mom, Jen, were here the night of the shootings. Jen's not ready to come back. And Robinson says his autistic son continues to struggle with the tragedy. But when he bowls, he makes a point of remembering those who are lost.
We don't have it on right now, but when he bowls in competition, we have a Lewiston Strong wristband. Every time he throws a strike, he holds that up.
Everyone has a different way of processing their grief and trauma from the shootings. For manager Tom Ghiberti, the return to work has come in stages. The first time he came back was just after he was released from the hospital. He'd been shot in both legs, but not before he was able to get multiple children to safety through a back door.
You know, I mean, the hero word was thrown out there, and I just don't accept that. I don't, you know, I hate that word. I don't feel myself in that, in, you know, I'm glad I was at the right place at the right time. I was here for a reason.
While he was recovering, he says the hardest part was not being able to attend his friends' and coworkers' funerals, but he says he's grateful to be back at work, to see the transformation that's taken place.
It has been a big change here, so that's been really nice to be able to see and be able to kind of let go, and I think that's what today's going to do. It's going to kind of like close one door, open the next one to be able to move on.
So to Justin and Sam and their resilience, please help me welcome them today.
At the ribbon-cutting ceremony attended by state and local dignitaries, owners Justin and Samantha Jaray said they couldn't have gotten here alone.
I just want to thank everybody for coming here and supporting us and for supporting us through the last 6 months and encouraging us to reopen back up. If we didn't have all of you, then we definitely wouldn't have been able to open our doors back up.
You're the reason. This is why. This is why we decided to reopen right here.
Justin Jaray has previously said that they would not let the tragedy define them. And today, he and hundreds of others showed that they will not. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Susan Sharon.
Meanwhile, mental health care providers in Lewiston will receive as much as $12 million in state funding this year. They say it will help stabilize and expand a system that's struggled to meet the demand for services since the pandemic and has seen the need grow since the mass shootings last fall. Patty White reports on what the funding will do.
After the shootings, Tri-County Mental Health Services says its waitlist swelled to more than 2,000. By this spring, Tri-County faced a $500,000 deficit and possible closure. but an allocation of nearly $2 million in the state budget allowed services to continue, says former Tri-County CEO Catherine Ryder, as the nonprofit was absorbed by the Portland-based behavioral health provider, Spurwink.
And had this joining of our organizations not happened, it would have been literally a tragedy in my mind. Staff would have been spun off. Clients would have been transferred eventually to some organization, but probably splintered across several organizations and disrupted in their care.
Spurwink president and CEO Eric Meyer says the funding coming to Lewiston will help stabilize services and provide quick access to care. A separate allocation of $1.4 million will establish a crisis receiving center. Spurwink runs the state's first crisis receiving center in Portland, which is open 24/7.
Not just for anybody to walk into, but also in support of law enforcement and the emergency rooms for individuals that don't need law enforcement involvement, don't really need medical involvement, but need crisis support in that moment. And it has filled that gap.
St. Mary's Health System is receiving a significant allocation of $8.5 million to plug a hole in recent operating losses. St. Mary's officials didn't respond to repeated requests for interviews, but Democratic State Senator Peggy Rotundo of Lewiston sponsored the legislation to provide them funding.
There was a concern that this entire area of the state could lose the only inpatient behavioral health service program that we have.
Some of the funding will also be used to establish a new intensive mental health day program at St. Mary's, which is intended to fill another gap in care. There was no money in the state budget for the new Resiliency Center in Lewiston. That's because it's funded under a pending federal grant to serve anyone affected by the mass shootings. Director Danielle Parent says the center offers a variety of free programs, yoga, tai chi, arts and crafts, and of course, support groups.
So we move furniture a lot. We've become pros at moving furniture to accommodate the space for whatever the need of the day is.
Although the federal grant will keep the center open for 27 months, Parent says there are limitations on how federal dollars can be used. Wellness activities like yoga and tai chi aren't covered, even though she says they help get people through the door.
I think often about what's most successful at the center for us so far, and that has been largely support groups and one-to-one support. But not everybody's ready for that. And so what we find is that people come to activities.
Community Concepts, which operates the Resiliency Center, is planning for a gap in funding and will seek state support in the future.
We're trying to prepare for it, trying to be very transparent about that, and to talk to folks about additional funding that's going to come to support that gap that we know is going to be sitting there.
CEO Jim Martin says he'd like to keep the Resiliency Center open beyond 27 months to serve people affected by the shootings as well as victims of other trauma. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
A multi-pronged investigation involving local, state, and federal law enforcement has identified about 100 illegal marijuana growing operations in Maine. Federal agencies are looking into potential ties to organized crime, but the U.S. Attorney's Office says there's no evidence that illegal immigration or human trafficking are associated with the illicit grows. Ari Snyder has more.
Law enforcement has shut down dozens of unlicensed marijuana grow operations in recent months, mostly in central Maine. The investigations have involved county sheriffs, state regulators, and federal agencies. In a statement released Friday morning, U.S. Attorney Darcy McKelvey said the U.S. Drug Enforcement Administration has identified a pattern of transnational criminal enterprises with alleged ties to China operating unlicensed marijuana grow operations in at least 20 states. The possibility that the grow operations in Maine could be linked to organized crime and the alleged interstate distribution of the marijuana merit federal involvement, according to McKelvey. However, McKelvey emphasized that there is no evidence that illegal immigration or human trafficking are associated with these cases. Individuals encountered at these sites have been U.S. citizens or lawful permanent residents from New York, Massachusetts, and other states, she says. McKelvey continued that nobody should, quote, ever be assumed to be part of a criminal enterprise simply because of their surname or nationality. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Ari Snyder.
Students at the College of the Atlantic are demanding the school condemn Israeli attacks in Gaza. Protesters began an encampment last Sunday, which they say has grown to over 30 tents and around 75 students, about 20% of the student body. Darren Collins is the president of the college. He says the protests are peaceful in contrast to demonstrations at campuses like UCLA.
There's been violence all over the the country around college campuses, both, you know, with police presence on campus, but also with students damaging property. And we don't have that here, which is a really good thing.
The protesters demand COA disclose and divest from companies involved in the Israel-Hamas conflict. They also want COA to publicly denounce the, quote, ongoing genocide of the Palestinian people. And a judge has dismissed a complaint from a parent in Newcastle who said her child's school violated her constitutional rights and withheld information about the child's gender transition. Amber Levine sued the Great Salt Bay Community School District last year, alleging that it violated her right to, quote, control and direct the upbringing of her child when school staff used the child's preferred name and pronouns and provided chest binders without first informing her. Levine challenged what she described as an unwritten withholding policy from the district, consisting of a, quote, regular pattern, custom, and practice of withholding information from parents in situations where the school believes a child may be transgender, and even, quote, encouraging children to conceal information. But school officials argued that no policy exists and say the district's guidelines provide for parental involvement and prohibit staff from encouraging students to keep secrets. In a decision released on Friday, U.S. District Judge John Levy sided with the district and dismissed Levine's complaint. Levy says Levine identified, quote, at most one occasion where a school employee actively withheld information from a parent, and says the complaint doesn't demonstrate a widespread custom within the district that would make it liable. Attorneys for the school district didn't respond to a request for comment. A spokesperson for Levine's attorneys at the Goldwater Institute said, quote, we are reviewing the decision and determining next steps to best protect Amber's constitutionally protected parental rights. And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org. And coming up on Maine Calling at 11 o'clock on Monday morning, author and playwright Monica Wood will discuss her new novel, How to Read a Book, which tells the story of intertwined lives in Maine, as well as the power of books to change us. I'm Robbie Feinberg. Thanks for listening and have a great weekend.